Well, as I look out over the audience here, I can see I'm going to have to give my dad a bad time because it's his first Sunday here and he's late. He had to go home and do what?
Find his suit.
Oh, he should have just wore what he had. There's no way he's going to find it in that house. He went over to find his suit. Yeah. It's an interesting process. I do want to thank Peggy though for entertaining them their first night here. They had a good time, from what I understand. Of course, all he told me was that he and Jack were swapping lies. So I don't know. Can I say that in church? Fish stories. We're telling fish stories. We shouldn't do that. Let's start with a word of prayer. Dear Lord, thank you so much for our lives. Thank you for this church family. Thank you for the support and the encouragement that we give each other. And I pray that as we study your word today, that we might gain understanding and who you are and what you would have us to be, and that we might get our minds going, that we might see that this life is given to us to explore and to try to understand as much as we can about you and our purposes here. And I pray that as we do study, that we might continue to grow in love and fellowship with each other. And Lord, I pray that when we go in a wrong direction, that you might discourage us from that, put roadblocks in our way, and I pray that you might continue to push us in our spiritual growth. And Lord, I pray that that you would be with those that aren't able to be here and for physical reasons, or that they're spiritually downtrodden, and that we might look for opportunities to encourage them, Lord. We ask all these things through your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. Last week we tried to look a little bit about encouraging and what it is to encourage each other in our not only in our everyday lives, but also in our fellowship here together, and to try to not necessarily pinpoint exactly what that looks like, but to maybe broaden our thoughts as to what that entails. Because I think that God has given us a great deal of freedom in our lives and in our ways that we deal with each other. And you know, part of that I feel confident about, because we're all different. We even look different. We act different. We come from different backgrounds, you know, and some of us come from good backgrounds, some of us come from bad backgrounds, some of us had to struggle, some of us didn't have to struggle so much, and so we're all different, and it's those differences, really, that add to strength, if you think about it. Sometimes we look at differences as being negative. You know, I'll use Lynn and myself, and she's here, so she can tell you if this is true or not, as an example. But my wife is very organized. She's very organized. I'm a type of person that's I don't know that I would qualify as being scatterbrained, but I'm easily distracted. And there was a point when we were married just a few years that we had a business, and we tried to work in that business together, and it was a real struggle because she kept trying to organize me, and I kept resisting being organized. And it took me 15 years to grow up, or maybe even a little longer than that, maybe about 15 years. I finally grew up, and I could appreciate the fact that she was organized. And I needed that. I needed that. And I also think, though, and I'll let her verify if this is true or not, that she needed to relax a little bit in some ways. And I think that together, because we were committed to our relationship, we both grew and we both are better people today because of that. Because I was willing to look at her strength, she was willing to look at my strength, and together we could see a positive thing in that, so we each tried to move in that direction. And I think as a body here, we have the same thing. I know that Paul speaks to that when he says we all are given different gifts. And it's those gifts that we need to use. But it's also, we need to understand that because someone else does not have the same gift and the same strength as I have, I should not think of them as being less. I should think of them as being an equal partner in this spiritual walk so that I can perhaps learn something from them. And I think it's those things that help and encourage us. Mr. Big here, his wife, that's Bruce Tabor, I call him Mr. Big. I think that's from, isn't that from Boris and Natasha, the Bullwinkle cartoon? Anyways, his wife taught me something this week. So, you know, we can learn from each other if we but open our minds to that possibility. Now today, I want to talk about equipping. Because I think the next step to encouragement is equipping ourselves for our spiritual growth and walk. So the question I want to start out with, and I'll say it twice in case I haven't worded it to where it's really understandable, but our assembly activities, is our worship, well, I can't say that because I use worship in the question, are our assembly activities acts of worship, or are they tools for togetherness? Is our assembly not just, I mean, do we have a separation today in this 3 hours we spend here or whatever it is? Do we segregate or separate acts of worship time from tools of togetherness, equipping one another in our daily walk? I guess the question is this hour set aside for tools of equipping and then the next hour for an act of worship?
Can we answer both the yes?
I'm asking a question, so yes.
Yes.
All of the above? Is there an always all of the above and multiple choice? So is that what you're saying? It should all be the same?
Not necessarily. I think
for the same purpose. I don't say they should all be the same. Because obviously, we do things differently now in this hour than we do in the next hour. Yes, sir?
The things we sometimes call elements of worship are intended by God to help us draw into closer fellowship with Him first. And as a byproduct, a very intentional byproduct, into greater fellowship with one another. But the elements of are things that cannot be secondary. They can't be things that just happen. They have to be things that are pursued very intentionally. The things that we read about there in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 16,
okay,
seem to indicate that the business of equipping is something that is done very intentionally and very specifically for very specific purposes. It doesn't seem to necessarily have to do with worship per se, but it doesn't exclude worship either.
Odessa?
I agree with what he said. And I know in Acts, it talks about the church at
mm-hmm.
the beginning.
Okay.
Prayer and fellowship go closely hand in hand quite often in the scripture. Prayer
okay.
and fellowship.
Acts chapter 2, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We know in Romans, the 12th chapter, Paul writes, "Therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship." Now, you know, I continue to stick with the plan. I believe that God's plan for man is modeled after the body. And I think it engulfs the family on a personal level. I think it involves the church as a corporate level. I think it spreads out from there. And you can even extrapolate that to maybe a national and perhaps even a worldly, although you know, as you get bigger, it gets more complicated. But you know, if we use the metaphor of the family at home, the time we have to involve ourselves with our children is when we have them there with us. Now, in society today, we don't do that very much, apparently, because we even have advertisements on radio. I hear about what a novel idea it is to have a meal together every day. And so, but when I was growing up, and probably most of you, I mean, that was what we did. We ate together. And that's time when parents can say, hey, you know, things come up, whether it's something bad happened or something happened bad to somebody else, something good happened. You discuss those things, you teach, you encourage, and you grow. And so it's that time, because when they leave the family to go about school or sports or whatever it is, that's the time that they practice it. But it's still living their life. And as a church family too, is it not, can we not say it's the same as we come to be, learn to be equipped to be better Christians? I mean, how often does it happen within the church body that, let me back up again. You know, sometimes the idea or the attitude is that we, you know, we punch the clock, so to speak. We come to class, we're here. We come to worship service, we're here. We come on Sunday nights, we're here. And if we're really good, we come on Wednesday nights. But how often does something bad happen within one of our families? You know, we find out so-and-so's getting divorced, or so-and-so's kid is, you know, having a bad time. Well, how could that be? They're here all the time. They're such good Christians. That's life? Is that what you said? Well, it is true. It is life. But the point I'm trying to get to is, should I not know that that's happening? Should I not be aware that there's some sort of struggle going on within that group? And why? And if I do, I'm compelled to do something, aren't I? Yes?
Our lives are supposed to be a worship to God all the time.
Okay.
I think it's easier for many of us, I hesitate to say all of us, maybe somebody's reached that mark, but for many of us, together like this, we're better. I don't want you to know my flaws because I'm ashamed of my flaws. So it's hard for you to figure out what's going on with me unless I pull you aside and say, Jim, you know, I'm wrestling with this or that, or I, such and such happened, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, we don't even know about things that are going on with people because they don't share.
Well,
we need to, but we don't, because we're humans and we, you know, we just don't.
Well, what you're saying is true, but I would argue to the point that if I involve myself enough with you, I can tell when something's off. Is that true? I mean, how many of you that have been married for a while, does your spouse know when something's off? Do they know? Even if you try to keep it secret, do they know? How do you know? They're not running around with a flag up saying, hey, How do you know?
You know the person, you know their manner, you know how they work, you know how they think. To me, the church is Sundays, the times we come together, is an opportunity that God has given us to come together as believers to share in our faith and worship our God as a group. But daily, we should be doing that on our own. That we come together is an encouraging time. God's made the church for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the big thing. And then when we come and we have classes and whatever, our fellowship, that's all just kind of extra over-the-top cup filled up, you know.
It's yeah.
It's important that we have to also walk our faith on our own and grow on our own instead of whatever other way we can.
Well, we must. But I think the thing that sometimes we ignore is the best word for it is that, and it's interesting too, because I know in Lynn's class on Wednesday night for the third to sixth grade, one of the things that she did this last week was, and some of you are involved in this, was the kids wrote down a question they had about the Bible, and I think one of them was, is Satan real? Was that one of them? Is the devil real? And what they did was they wrote down a question, and then they wrote down a member here that they wanted to give the question to answer. Now that's great. I didn't get one to answer me, so that must mean they don't think I know anything. But the point is, I think we ignore the fact that the devil is a real entity. He's trying to cause mischief. He's trying to create problems. And sometimes, you know, we refuse to accept the fact that he's alive and he's real, and he's trying to cause problems in our lives. And once we accept that, then we can help each other through these things. Because for me to try to fight all the battles myself, you know, I can think I'm Hercules or whatever the guy's name was, Achilles, you know, that I'm impervious to everything. But, you know, the truth is I'm not. And so I need help. I need someone to help encourage me to do the right thing. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I have a wife that does that. But I think it's also important that we have friends here that do it. Because, let's just face it, you know, guys, sometimes our wives, there's stuff that we encounter that they can't understand. And women have the same issues. There's things that you encounter that I can try to empathize, but in reality, I can't, you know. And maybe the problem is, you know, her relationship with me, you know. So how can I help her with that if she's struggling with something I'm doing? So the thing is, together, if we are involved, we can help equip each other to go through our lives. You know, and the Bible is clear on this. You know, it tells you older women to what? Well, I'm not, that's true. That's number one, love your husbands. No, that's not what I'm talking about. The one I'm talking about is where it talks about in relationship to the younger women. You have responsibilities, don't you?
To love their husbands.
Okay. So it's, and there's instructions for women, older women to younger women. Yes, Ben.
Mm-hmm. wait a minute, that's not what I wanted to hear. He said, no. He said, how can you hold each other accountable for what foundation you're building for that relationship?
Well, she's here now, so.
And it's so true, brother. How can we hold each other accountable? Even here, if we're all listening to you preach, but I don't know if my brother or sister are being cut the same way. So how do we know if that tree that you're planting, the seed that you're planting for that tree, if that fruit, if everybody in their heart is, you know, so sharing and discipling, or sharing with one another, it is important. It's important for our growth. In other words, not only do we come to service to hear the word, but also, you know, what did you get from today's service? And then for her to ask me, and what did you get from today's service? Sharing. So going back to that, it is important. I feel that it's extremely important that we share with one another. I mean, we're not to judge, because you know what, there's only one judge, but to be held accountable to help us hear us in the right path in our walk with God, with Jesus. So it's not in vain, you know, everything. You standing up there is not taking a vain. So to answer, or my answer to your question, my personal answer to your question, it is very important that we share with one another, not to discourage, but to encourage, to see an opportunity. Going back to what Dave said before, don't look at your downfall as something negative to beat yourself over the head with, but see them as opportunities of growth in your walk with Christ.
And that's part of the, I think that's part of the blessing and the strength in this type of a organization or organism, because if I struggle with something, there's a good chance that there's an older Christian that struggled with it as well. Or maybe somebody younger is struggling with something that I've gone through in the past, and I can help them.
Building on what Ben said, there's also a key element that men are supposed to be the spiritual leaders. And oftentimes, I think that's a problem nationally, that men have not, they've not stepped up to the plate and been the leaders that they should be. Mm-hmm.
You're right. See, the Elder Oliver's made it here.
Back to your text in Romans 12, these are acts of living sacrifices. This is our spiritual worship. We incorrectly combine worship, what happens in these walls. But this brother interacting, being responsible, and helping, assisting, being there, this is the living sacrifice. I've discovered through the years that people need me most when I have the least time. They need me most when I have the least to offer, when I'm so weak. But this thing we're talking about is the lifeblood of the relationship, the church family.
Okay, so that kind of leads me into the second question I had, because, you know, we've talked about how our assemblies are for us to come and give. They're for us to come here and give. But is it possible that we need something and we come here to try to get it? Is that wrong? I mean, if I come here each day, each Sunday, to give what I can, that's good. But what if I need something? What if I need to come here and find something? What if I'm short? What if I'm feeling empty?
Jim, I would argue, going back to your premise at the beginning about the different strengths that we have, that if each of us comes with the determination that we're going to give from our strength, then each of us will leave having gotten something, having gotten what we need. Because we'll be on the lookout for how we can give to others of our spiritual strength at a particular point in time. And if we're at a point that we really need to get something, if we're weakened, if our strength is weakened for whatever reason, and others are coming with that mindset to give of themselves, we're going to find our need met. But it's only when we all take on that attitude and realize that just the point that you're making, how much we need each other, that we will be able to get what we're needing.
Well, but I think, and I think that's true, but I also think that there are occasions that sometimes we just feel empty. You know, I'm reminded of Elijah. I love the story of Elijah, you know, and we talk about how a man that talked to God and witnessed fire from heaven could be spiritually weak. But yet there were times when he would said, "Hey God, just take me. I got nothing left to give. I've done all I can do, and look what's come of it. Nothing. I'm ready to go. Just take me now. I don't get it." You know, sometimes we're just empty. And I think that, you know, to further use the story of Elijah is that he never gave up on the relationship with God. He never did. He sought his solace. He sought the solution to his emptiness with God. And God was there to help him with it. And I think that there are times, and I think maybe that's why we have people that give up on us as an assembly. Because there's times in periods of people's lives when they're just flat empty. There's nothing. And if they come here hoping that there's some sort of peace, some sort of answer, some sort of connection to get that. If we don't have it for them, what do? Where do they go? Where do they turn? You know, and I think that, you know, to carry on the story of Elijah, God showed him that, hey, you're not alone. I've got all these other people over here that I've been protecting that you didn't know about. And that's us, really. When people are empty, they need it. Because sometimes life does that to us. And sometimes it's due to our own actions or our own stupid decisions or our own, you know, mental laziness. But it doesn't negate the fact that we need a connection of strength. And again, I concur with what you said, that sometimes we come and we can give. But sometimes, you know, sometimes doing the right thing, you know, if we're on the right path and we do the right thing, we do it because we know it's the right thing to do, even if we don't feel like doing it necessarily. Because we know, we should know, or we have hope or faith, confidence that on the other side of that, we're going to see that it was the right thing to do. Because we knew we were on the right path to begin with. Did you have your hand up?
I did, but I don't want to. Years ago, I was teaching a high school class. This mm-hmm. was over in Oxnard. And there were some kids that were, their attendance was really sporadic. And sometimes kids that come from a non-church family, it's difficult to connect with them outside of church mm-hmm. because their parents may think you're some sort of weirdo or whatever. Anyway, I was doing my very best to keep up this relationship with some of these kids, but it just wasn't happening. And I think in this one group, it was like a family. There were four of them. And a year later, they showed up to church after me having tried to hunt them down, I guess. You know, I said, "Well, it's so good to see you and all, but even then, you have to kind of watch what you say because you may, you know, I've missed you." Well, now they feel guilty. You know, there's things that you say that mess with people's minds sometimes. Anyway, I said, "Well, what made you think that I would be here? It's been so long since I saw you." And I said, "Well, we just knew that you would be here. That's what you do." And I looked them dead in the eye, trying to love them as much as I could. well, don't I have the same right to expect that of you? Because I missed you, and it was discouraging that you weren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people don't understand that. You know, I don't know, maybe they don't hold themselves to a standard that they expect from others. There's certain people here that I know every time I come here, they're going to be here. But the truth is, we should all be here. We need to be here because we need one another tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't feel that.
Yeah. Dad?
Back in your Romans 12, I don't know if that was your text tomorrow, I'm sorry I didn't get to the end. But back in Romans 12, Pastor, among the gifts of the church is the gift of encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most famous guys in the New Testament was known for an encourager. Dave has one or two of his congregations that are encouragers. They seek him out. Every place I've been, there's been a particular person who was encouraging. And this is part of the ministry. This is part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
When your son stubs his toe, you get him going to encourage. Is a part of what the family's about.
Yeah, when he hurts himself, I just shake my head. Ben.
Yes, 2 Corinthians 1:3, it says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, for the Father of compassion and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our trouble so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God.
Mm-hmm.
Plain statement, you know, I guess going back to what Dave was emphasizing, what Dave was saying, and if you read on, verse 8, it says, you do not want to be uninformed, brothers, about the hardships we suffered, or want you to be uninformed, brothers, about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. That's deep. What that's telling me is they're sharing that with the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Not only just to share it, but also to receive encouragement.
Right. No, and that's really what we're trying to emphasize here, because sometimes we get so caught up in the structure of our worship time. We get so, you know, we have to start at 11. Otherwise, we're all off. You know, the preacher can't preach his normal 32 and a half minutes, and we can only sing 5 songs instead of 6, and we got to be sure we're out of here at 12:02 because, for whatever the reason. And when we push to that, when that's our emphasis, then we lose the sight you know, we're here to encourage. We're here to equip each other to live our lives each day. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's easier than others. All of you, I'm assuming, were raised in families. And unless you were an only child, you probably remember sometimes there was a lot of chaos that was going on in the family. Now that my dad's here, I can always tell all kinds of stories about him in my recollections growing up. But, you know, one of the things, you know, when we came to Ventura, he was excited about is we had a house with 2 bathrooms, because, you know, with 3 women and 3 guys, it's, you know, it's problematic with 1 bathroom. But then I remember him complaining because everybody ended up in the same bathroom. It's like, we got 2 bathrooms and we're all in the same bathroom, and he couldn't have his time in there to get ready to come to church. That's when I usually remember it being a problem. But, you know, it's sometimes there's just more things going on. Before services, some Sundays, there's a lot of fellowshipping. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of laughter. There's all those kind of things that go on. And if we're, which is good, because it's good. Sometimes we only see each other on this time. And so it's good to make that connection, to make that a fellowship, and maybe encourage. Or maybe we find out something that's going on in that person's life that they need encouragement during the week, or a contact during the week, or something happens that way. And so we need to, you know, we don't want things to be chaotic, because, you know, God tells us that we should be organized. But, You know, what I find in my own family is sometimes, you know, things start spinning, the energy level starts spinning up. And I mean, Lynn was just making a comment yesterday, you know, we've had Bryce and Bonnie home since Tuesday and things have been super lovely, everybody's been getting along, and then yesterday coming out of a game, and of course you're always arguing over who gets to sit by the window in the car, but you know, it's just all that bantering and stuff that goes on, and it's stuff that you know, in your insane moments you miss, and then you remember it when it comes back. So it's those kind of things in life that you know, I think give you a certain amount of pleasure. There's memories, there's a realization that it's a life and you're alive. And I think, you know, we should expect the same thing from here, shouldn't we? I mean, if I'm having a relationship or a fellowship with each other, sometimes something exciting happens. Sometimes there's bantering or disagreement. All those things are part of our fellowship together. Danette?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, that kind of gets back to what Dave, I think, started out with, the fact that our daily lives are in worship to God. And but as, you know, what does God expect of me? You know, we learn, and some of the stuff we've read today is that my spiritual worship is loving my brother. My spiritual worship is encouraging my brother. My spiritual life involves me being involved and being an encourager, being a helper with you. It's not, you know, again, I go back to the story of Elijah. What did the prophets of Baal do when their God didn't answer them? They cried louder. They began to cut themselves. You know, self-mutilation. God doesn't want us to do that. He's not looking for us to sacrifice a baby or a virgin. He's not expecting us to do those kind of things. He wants us to, as part of our worship to Him, to help and encourage and then be involved into His life. Now, there was another hand over here. I can't remember. Ben? Yeah, that's. I think Bill Cosby had one that was like that as well. I want to read something here that thought I'd marked it, but anyways, it has to do with. It has to do with us in our lives as how are we known? How is Jim Oliver known? You know, sometimes we get caught up in the idea of well, we're Christians. In the course of my work, I have opportunities sometimes to talk about to people about God or my faith, and you know, one of the things that they want to do is they go, well, where do you go to church? Where do you worship? You know, and so, and I tell them, I go, you know, church on Bryn Mawr in Ventura. And sometimes, you know, because of over the years we have a Bible Bear, you know, they associate it with that, but you know, it doesn't always encourage further conversations per se. Sometimes, you know, they want to know how you're different and in what they believe or what they their practices are. But I was I can't find the story right now, but it brought about the idea of you know who I am and how do I explain to people who I am. And this particular story that LaGard Smith recalls in his book is he's bought a place. It's called the Cotswold. I don't know where that is, but I imagine it's a small countryside town. What's that?
Scotland.
It's in Scotland. Anyways, he and his wife have a cottage there, and there was some people that were from Tennessee, and they were in that country traveling, and they thought they'd stop by and see him. They'd never met before in their life, and so they had come into town, and there was a young lady who was gardening in the cemetery, and they stopped and they asked her if she knew where LaGard Smith lived, and she wasn't from the town, but she made the comment. She goes, "You mean the man that talks about the Bible?" And they ended up in his doorstep. And the point is, you know, there's lots of opportunity for us to talk about the Bible. There's a great deal of wisdom. I'm not talking about, you know, going home this afternoon and knocking on your neighbor's door and asking if they want to have a Bible study. But you know, as we interact with our neighbors, if something comes up, it gives us a chance. It gives us a chance to say something. I have through circumstances at work, I have this 70 something year old lady who has had some physical problems to where she can't take care of herself. She has no kids, she has no family in the area, and I've known her for 7 or 8 years, you know, through a business relationship, but you know, her life got to the point where she had somebody who was taking care of her, and then something happened to him, and so, you know, she was stuck in her house alone. And you know, one of the ways I was raised was that, you know, you always respected mothers and older women. I mean, that was just, it didn't matter how they were, how they acted. That was the rule, and I think that is a biblical based responsibility, because you know we are told that there's two groups of people that we are specifically told to take care of, orphans and widows. I mean I've had conversations with several people from the legal system, because she's been put in a home and I was helping her with some of her business, but to a T they all want to know why, you know, why were you so nice to this old lady? Well, there's only one reason, really, because I've been commanded to by God. Now, to them, sometimes that's a strange proposition, but the point is, the simple profession, really, if that's why I'm doing it, signal something to those people. Now, maybe they're curious, maybe they're not, maybe they just go on with their lives, which is fine. But it gives me an opportunity to stretch myself. I mean, how hard is it to say that? Should it be hard? Reminds me of the story of Jesus when he healed the man by saying his sins were forgiven. And they got all over him. Who said you had the right to forgive sins? He goes, well, what's harder to say? Get up and walk, or your sins are forgiven? And so sometimes it's a simple thing. But are we prepared? Are we prepared to as people of the Bible? I want to talk for just a couple minutes on kind of an extension of this, I think, and that's this idea of church growth. Because one of the things that we've comes up in the leaders' meetings periodically is a body that's growing, and what is it that keeps us where we are. And is that bad or is it good? I mean, there's all kinds of opinions across the board. And I think that, you know, sometimes we think, well, big is better. Sometimes we think small is better. But I want to start with a reading from Acts 2, which I think Odessa talked about earlier. And in verses 46 and 47, it says that every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now, the idea that I just want to look at for a minute is because, you know, the early church, they were small groups, basically. And I'm not trying to advocate that we need to break up into small groups, but the point is that as they grew, they broke off. And they started meeting in different people's homes. And it was something that was constant, sometimes day to day, where they would meet together and they would fellowship together. They would pray together. They would encourage each other. And I'm sure they would bear one another's burdens. And so the question I know that we've talked about in the leaders' meetings is there some point where there's like a wall? In a book I read by Malcolm Gladwell, it's called The Tipping Point, and he talks about how a small thing or a small idea can take off. It can grow like wildfire. I mean, there's a lot of things. I think the Methodist Church movement originally started with one person and a small idea, and it grew rapidly in many years. He uses the idea of Paul Revere and how he was able to have the revolution catch fire, because he was one of the ones that instigated that from the top. Anyways, they found out that there's this idea of 150, they call it, and it's how they call it the rule of 150. And they've gone back through history. Went back through history, and there's lots of groups that in primitive societies I don't know how they figured this out, but the average group was 148.4 people. And as we look at things like the military breaks up units. They don't have units in larger than 200 men. Because cohesion and you know, in those kind of things, relationship is really important. You have to have a relationship. And once you get above that, it gets to be where you can't know people. It also gets to the point where you might have such a varying idea on how things should be done that it becomes problematic. So then you need to have different sets of organizational structures to make sure that it stays organized and cohesive. He points out that once you get to a certain size, things cannot just happen. I mean, there has to be organizational leadership, but things become more problematic. And so the whole idea, though, is that for us, you know, if a family gets too big, if a group gets too big, then you lose the ability to interact and interrelate and know people. And if you've ever worshipped at some place where it's really big, there's no way you can know everybody. There's just no way. It's impossible. I know that, what's the size of the college age group at OC?
There's probably at least 300.
300? Okay, so you got 300 there. I know on Sunday mornings, what do they have? They have two worship services, and there's, what's the congregation size? 5,000, 6,000, something like that? Oh, it's 3,000? Okay. Still, it's a sizable group of people, you know, and I don't attend there all the time, so it's hard for me to know exactly how hard it is to know people, but I've been there on several occasions, and you know, it's just, you look around and it's overwhelming. You know, there's no way you can know people. So for us to work, what am I trying to say? Without a strict structural leadership, you know, there is a maximum or a wall, supposedly, of how many people there can be, so that we can continue to operate as a family and encourage each other and still have a relationship with one another that is mutually strengthening and beneficial. So I guess the point I was trying to make at this on this is that you know, sometimes we feel like we should be growing more as a group, that every seat should be filled, and that would be wonderful. But there is a some sort of a wall that comes up that makes that more difficult, makes it more problematic. And as we go back to the church, the early church in Acts, you know, as they met and the numbers grew, they didn't form a mega congregation. As they converted people, those that had leadership qualities, those that had hospitality, you know, they would meet and go in different homes and meet and spread out. Would they meet together as a group? We're not told that, but I'm assuming at some point, you know, there were meetings of all the Christians in a particular town. I mean, how many of us are encouraged to go to Pepperdine? I mean, it's encouraging to go down there and see all the people, to hear the singing. You know, would that be something that would be viable to do every Sunday? I mean, would you be willing to drive 45 minutes every Sunday to be a part of something like that? Or is it more comfortable, convenient, encouraging to meet, like in our location here, where we can get to know each other, where we can get to fellowship with each other? You know, I think that there's something to be said for that. I know Greg and Shannon drive a great deal every Sunday, a couple times on Sunday and Wednesday to meet here with us. And so it's, you know, as I look at that, I mean, they have a much greater commitment to make to be here than I do. I mean, it takes a much bigger effort to drive 30 minutes, or however long it takes, than it does to drive 7.5 minutes. There's a hand over here. Yes?
I think it's the same, when a teacher prepares, mm-hmm. and I know I've been in a position where I prepared, and there is a diminishing group that comes, mm-hmm. it's very discouraging to that teacher. Mm-hmm. So I think going back to where we are to live sacrificially, even if we don't think we need that lesson, we need to be there for other people, to encourage the leaders, to encourage other people to attend, mm-hmm. and to have that fellowship. Mm-hmm. So it works both ways. You can have a large group and not feel encouraged, and you can have a very small group, mm-hmm. and be discouraged.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, as parents and as individuals, you know, it's, we have to be on our guard as to what we're doing and how and why. You know, it's there's a lot of distraction for parents with kids these days. I mean, sports. Bruce was just lamenting the other day that you know, it seems like the concerts or the practices for band or whatever, they always, school back to school nights, they're always on a Wednesday. So, you know, it's like you have to make some sort of a decision, a discussion. It's not easy. It's not something that's lightly to be made. But, you know, it's I commend Greg and Shannon, you know, because they're usually here, and they it takes a big commitment for them to drive out here, especially on a Wednesday night when, you know, your kids are going to be up late and they got school the next day. I'm not embarrassing you, am I? A little bit? Okay. Well, I'll stop it. Mr. Beig, do you have your hand up?
No.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir. Well, thanks for that. I just want to encourage each one of us to try to make a point of being involved in each other's lives in some way, just to know, because there are people here that are struggling. There are people here that are facing some serious issues in their lives, and like Bruce said, a lot of us are real private. I think we are. And sometimes it's hard to share. I know sharing is, and this is a stereotype, but I know it's mostly a female thing. Females like to share. And us guys, we don't like to share. But, we struggle. We struggle too. And men, it's important that, we encourage. We know what one another is struggling with. And I think that's ultimately what it's about and what God wants us to do. And that's really the strength that holds families together. It's the strength that holds us together as God's people. And it's really the benefit because there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on, and people face lots of struggles. So I want to encourage each other. Well, thanks for coming.